Welcome back, or welcome to the ABCs of Disability Planning. My name is Eric Jorgensen. I'm your host and the founder of Special Needs Navigator. Today, I'm really excited to share with you guys the conversation I had with Steve and Carrie Johnson. You may already be familiar with them. They're the podcast hosts of the Navigating Life as We Know It podcast. If you don't know them or if you've never heard that podcast, I really encourage you to check them out. They do a phenomenal job. They're based out of Michigan, and they have a son who's in his 30s, Liam, L-I-A-M, who's got disabilities and challenges, and Steve and Carrie have been there, done that. They're still living living it just like you and I are. I wanted to interview Steve particularly because he has a similar journey to me. He was a financial advisor. Now he's doing a podcast, and he started a different disability-focused organization called Oasis. And Oasis is a community designed to help individuals hang out and support each other and give them a place to live. It's not limited by a diagnosis, and it provides a shared experience for all the families. Now, in this conversation, we're kind of all over the place, because we have so many different topics we want to talk about, and we just share so many common experiences. You know, the biggest thing that I would like you to take away from this interview is something Steve said. It's life is hard, but it teaches us a lot. And that's not meant to be dismissive or make light of any of the challenges that you're facing, but I really think it's true. Life is hard, but it teaches a lot. The key is we have to be open to learning. And then I really hope you listen to this podcast and you take away from it some ideas for how you can overcome the challenges you've faced, or how you can take something away from what may otherwise have been a very negative experience. Anyway, I really, really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you do as well. I do encourage you to check out the Navigating Life as We Know It, or NLOCKI podcast. And then the other two resources that Steve gave us is Hidden Brain and Snap Judgment. Both of those, I believe, are documentaries. I'll have links to those in the show notes, as well as a link to Steve's podcast. As always, if you have a comment or something you would like me to record, please let me know. Steve, Carrie, welcome. We were talking prior to starting the recording that, you know, both of you have been very involved in the disability space for a while before starting Navigating Life as We Know It, or NLOCKI. And Steve, you were a financial advisor, and Carrie, you've been a mom for, you know, over 30 years, right? So would you mind telling me a little bit about your beginnings? I mean, what got you, Steve, when you were a financial advisor, were you a financial advisor who specialized with special needs, or did that come later?
It was always part of it, but it became greater at a later date when I tried to focus on it more. I mean, I started in this industry in 1986 or 87, and Liam was born in 88. So he was right there from the inception. But at that point, I was learning the basics about insurance and mutual funds and investing. So I wasn't really focusing on him yet. I was trying to get my sea legs for just doing financial planning. And it was a while until I started finding other parents in similar circumstances, and it was a natural thing to talk to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, having a child with autism, you can fly 2,000 miles from here and go into a room where there's all strangers, but you see somebody with an autistic child, and guess what? You have a connection. Okay. You know, you don't have to have any other social connections, you have a life experience connection. So the people that I worked with that had an individual with special needs, I began to learn more and more about what their long-term needs were going to be. And I was learning about ours at the same time. But I also realized that the amount of confusion and stress that we live with sometimes is enormous. Yeah. And so I had a greater empathy for them, a lot more patience. That sometimes you lose patience with customers that can't make up their minds, but I knew what they were coming from. So I just began learning more and more about it. Then I'd partner with attorneys, and I started learning about all the legal aspects. Then you'd partner with somebody else. And so I started this in Chicago with a little bit of talk about it. Then we moved to Lincoln, Nebraska, and I was a general agent there. So I really wasn't doing one-on-one with people. I was working with agents, but I would help them when they had a case with somebody who had autism or cerebral palsy. I would gather information and go with them on the case. And then went to Arizona, same thing, did more of that. And then we came to Michigan. And why do we move so much? We keep getting kicked out of all those states. That's why. So.
And Carrie, while Steve was working, I remember when my wife was alive, my wife really managed the household and really kept track of everything. And I imagine back in 88, you know, you mentioned Liam is on the autism spectrum. He's also uses a wheelchair and has some other challenges, some other disabilities. So in the 80s and early 90s, I don't think there was very much resources. How did you find the information you needed?
Again, it was just mainly networking. Liam was in therapy from outside of the hospital. I mean, we brought him home as an infant and I started going to therapy with him and then talking to the therapist and actually talking to one of the therapists, she totally blew me out of the water. And she said, oh, so, you know, when are you going to have your first soft tissue release? I'm like, excuse me, a what? I want to do a who? And so she's like, going to need to have that done. Total. I was like, wait a minute. So therapist, and then of course, you know, you get a little, you're there a little early or you're there a little late. You start meeting other parents and moms. When we moved to Lincoln, Nebraska, I went to work part-time for a pediatric occupational and physical therapy clinic.
Smart.
So I was the receptionist and billing person, office manager, everything rolled into one, and meeting the people. Well, I mean, they loved me there because the moms would come in and I'm talking to the mom and I'm talking to the kid, whether they can talk or not, it didn't matter because I'm making eye contact and I'm chatting with them anyway. So again, you're making more connections and, you know, you hear about this and how are you doing that? And well, how did you get that? And who told you about that? And where do you go for this? And actually Nebraska has a fabulous, fabulous program. I wish it was everywhere else. One of the things that they did was, once a month, you would go to Omaha and spend the day with your kid and you would hit all the specialists. Wow. They would just schedule their time with you and your kid. You'd go in the room and the specialists would come in and out. You didn't go in and out. They did. I was like, this is awesome. Everybody should do this. Why isn't everybody doing this? It was awesome. And the other benefit with that was if the general practitioner is like, you know, I'm hearing a little weirdness in the bowels and, you know, maybe we need to have somebody come in and take a look at on the schedule that we went and that guy would come in. And, you know, it was just like, this is so cool, especially with Liam and he's in the room. He stayed there. Everybody came in and out. It's like, awesome.
Not making six different trips. They're making the trip.
Yes. Which is great. And you knew you're going to be there for the day. Fine. Have everybody come and see him on this day. That was so wonderful.
Well, Eric, a lot of our knowledge of disability came just from experience and learning how to do things the wrong way and then the right way, you know. But I think one thing that Carrie just mentioned, and I'm sure you experienced this too, if you're out with your son, Matthew, correct?
William,
I'm sorry. No.
How did you mess that one up?
I don't know. If you're out with your son, William, that's right. You sound like Liam, William. If you're out with your son, Liam, at a restaurant and the waitress asks you or wait person asks you what he wants, they usually get a smaller tip than if they ask him what he wants.
Right.
Out of respect, people assume that he doesn't have a voice and he can't hear. Well, he can actually tell you what he wants. He might whisper it. He might point to the menu, but he can say what he wants.
Yep.
And so it's just a matter of respect.
Did you guys ever, so a lot of families I talk with, one or both of the parents will feel isolated or alone. It doesn't seem like you guys had that. It seemed like, you know, maybe because you're both very outgoing or.
It is very isolating. Definitely did. As a matter of fact, shortly after we moved to Arizona, far, far, far away from all of my family, still in Illinois, at one point I remember calling my mom. I was having a hard time getting Liam in school. They wouldn't talk to me. They were putting me off. And I didn't understand that. And I had a great experience. Again, from Nebraska, I'm coming here and I'm like, what the heck is going on? And as I'm talking to my mom at one point, I said, you know what? I'm not unpacking anything here in this state. I'm just going to shove it all back in the truck and I'm coming home. I'm coming back to Illinois because anything's better than this. This is horrible. I'm having a horrible time. And my mother said, oh, now, Carrie Jean, you have a big mouth. I suggest you start using it.
He has ever since.
Thanks, Mom. Thanks. Thanks. Like that, thank you for the sympathy there. Poor me. Yeah, no, poor me. Get in there. So I did.
She's
I called
also,
the school.
She also said to you on more than one occasion, perhaps your mission on Earth is to change this.
So. Right, right. You know, part of what you need to do is educate these people because obviously they need education.
Yeah. And is that what you tell other moms that might be feeling the same way? Because it can, you know, I'm a single dad and I can tell you it gets really, you know, there are some dark times. You know, recently my son, I shared with you that I've been, you know, I'm just a hot mess lately, getting scheduled and stuff. But, you know, my son had told me by text that he wants to die and some other things. I'm like, well, geez, dude, you know, and things are okay, but it does, to your point, Carrie, about how dark it can get. What do you tell other moms or what do you tell other parents?
That's how we got into Oasis. That's how we started Oasis.
Oasis didn't start as a housing operation. Mm-hmm. It was, I was scheduled to do a financial planning workshop at Gilda's Club. And Gilda Radner, of course, was a comedian that died of ovarian cancer, but she was very brave in sharing about her experience going through stage 4. She was part of it before she passed away. She established Gilda's Club. My understanding is Grand Rapids, Michigan has one of the first ones. And that was just a warm, welcoming place for families to come that were experiencing cancer with anybody in the family. And it was a great equalizer. In the parking lot, you could see Ferraris and old jalopies.
Wow. You know?
Right, right.
Because cancer is very indiscriminate when it comes to wealth or station in life. And so these folks were able to form friendships totally regardless of where they were in the other part of the world because they shared this. And I knew that was an experience that special needs families have too. Every spectrum you can imagine, economically, education, whatever.
Right, and it's not limited to a particular diagnosis.
Right, yeah. We're not about autism or about cerebral palsy. We're about anything. And we got some really strange situations where a son or daughter might have something that happens 1 in 5 million times.
Yeah.
There's 4 other people in the Midwest that have it, okay? I can't pronounce it. They've become experts on it. But, you know, so I looked at this Gilda's Club. And first of all, nobody showed up for the financial planning workshop. And I think God put me there to inspire me because I walked through this place, but it's a beautiful location.
Oh, yes.
Very warm and friendly because that's where people would go and they would be always welcome. It's kind of like the bar Cheers where everybody knows your name.
Yeah.
And they're always glad you came. And so people would be mourning a loss there. They'd be celebrating, you know, cancer free for however long or a new therapy that's working. And I realized that's kind of the same things that we go through in the disability community. And I wanted a house. I wanted some place where we could just hang out and support each other. And then after a while, we realized that there's one bridge that everybody has to cross over. And that's the bridge of where will they live? Because the chances are they'll live longer than we will. Right. That might not have been true 50 years ago, but it is today. And so that was the uniting force. And we decided we have to pick one thing, but we'll never be that one thing. Because in order to have people live together and play together and have a home, they've got to know each other. So the relationships are still the most important thing.
Right.
Brick and mortar, as hard as that might seem, is the easy thing. That's why I love about Nested. You know, when you interviewed Andrew Parker and so did I, they make that part of it easy because you don't have to worry about the house and everything else. They find the house, they fix it up. You move in, you rent it. You can focus on the care and hopefully get them to live more independently with supports.
You're exactly right. And so would you mind sharing a little bit more about Oasis? Is it limited to Michigan? Is it what's your mission? And are you still involved in any way, or are you more of a...
I stepped down from being president just because I want to do things like the podcast. And, you know, I have a way I'm a real hot mess at a buffet because I need a huge plate because I want to do everything and I can't say no. And then I do many things poorly. You look like you identify with that. Okay. So what I did is I stepped down from that, but I'm still on the board and kind of a de facto on part of the leadership because I was there from the beginning. Me and two partners, Lynn Serdak and Grace Smith, two women who own their own businesses. One is an architect and one is an electrical engineer. They know the builders who are creating apartments out of old buildings like Emerald Flats, which we just moved into, five of our young people. So they have all the connections. I could not have gotten anywhere without them. And they've been with me from the very start back at the Gilda's Club. So we are still involved in that. I'm still hoping that Liam has higher needs than many people that go out to live independently. We don't want to say no to anybody. We want to say yes to as many as possible. We believe that people with higher needs, wheelchair, maybe even medically fragile to a certain extent, that they could live independently with the appropriate supports. And independently, we mean in the community, not in a group home, in a place where they can decide when to go to bed. They can decide if they want to go to the mall or not. They have choice in their life. Sometimes you lose some of that in a group home.
Yes.
And yeah. They'd have their own lease. They and or through their guardian, depends upon, you know, the situation. But they certainly would have more say in what their life looks like. And so we believe Oasis can be that way. And we're going to try as much as we can. There will be some people maybe with a level of medical fragility that's not going to be viable.
Or sensible.
Yeah. But you know, it'd be easier if we just had a band of ability and said, we're going to serve the people within this level, okay? And we would be able to move faster. But that's not what we're about. We want to offer this to as many people as possible. Now, it's funny. The name, the official name registered as an LLC and as a nonprofit is Oasis Community.
Okay.
We added as doing business as Oasis Community of West Michigan, because I always felt that it should be in all of Michigan and then all of the Midwest and every, but the bottom, I've stopped that Dominion thinking because that's kind of an ego thing. I don't care if somebody else, many other people do the same model. That's great. It doesn't have to be under one tent. You know, there's no incentive to do that. Because it could be very different in a different state. They can be more creative in how they do it. The point is that we need many, many more organizations doing the same kind of thing that we are because there's a huge housing shortage and it's going to get worse.
So if somebody was interested in building a community or developing some type of housing in their community, let's say Idaho or something, right? And they wanted to reach out, would you be open to them reaching out to you or reaching out? Would you have them reach directly to Oasis to say, hey, we really like your business model. We'd like to learn more.
We are all, Lynn and Grace and I and the other members of the board are very eager to export our information and our experience.
Yeah.
And usually we send people to an organization in Evanston, Illinois called the Center for Independent Futures, CIF. Because that's where we learned about having a very compliant home and community-based service model. And you probably know what that's about, and some other folks would too. That's one acronym that's in all 50 states, HCBS.
Yep.
To be able to meet those in the neighborhood, least restrictive, most freedom type model for individuals, CIF is all about that. And we learned from them how to do it. And they actually not only serve people, they have people living in homes and apartments and condos, but they teach classes in this and they have people from all over the East Coast that have come here. I don't know how far west, but they've got quite a few people have gone through and taken their program.
That's awesome.
Pretty good.
No, I love that. And you know, the federal government has grants and ways that you can fund these buildings, you know, specifically for people with disabilities. They have different code, you know, tax codes and things. So
yeah.
I do think there's a lot of possibility out there, especially for old factories or something that are shut down and, to rezone and rebuild.
Or schools.
Or schools, yeah.
The school that we're in was built during the last pandemic, interestingly enough. And it was built for children with disabilities, wide halls. And it's historically a beautiful building. and they did a great job restoring it. And Grace on our board, the president of Oasis now, was one of the people driving that program. She would tell the builders and the architects, you cannot take out this wall, you cannot take out that. It's part of the historical architecture. So they had to build around it. As a result, these apartments don't look like cookie cutters. They're very different from each other. Yeah. A lot of personality to them. Yeah.
Beautiful, though. And they kept the really tall windows.
Oh, wow. And they're
just beautiful.
Yeah. Now, I don't know where you buy window treatments for a window that's 10 foot tall. But
there you go, customer.
So you'll figure it out.
Bespoke now.
Yeah. But you're right. There's old buildings everywhere, and many of them have a lot of character. And if they're properly placed, like they're on a bus route or they're in the community, that's great. If they're in out the sticks, this isn't going to work so well. But this could be a transportation issue. But a number of people have been looking at these ideas, outlet malls where they have all these stores that look like a little village. Yeah. Some of those aren't making it anymore. Now, they're not in town, but they could be with transportation. People could be have access to town. But whenever there's a building that could be used, it's a shame to see it go to waste or be torn down eventually when it could be used for housing.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to get the word out there to investors, right? I mean, there's a lot of real estate investors, especially nowadays, who are buying properties. Well, why not look at old strip malls, old hotels, old schools? Mm-hmm. And then you could make a living, you know, maybe partnering with somebody like Nested. And, you know, so you do the building, you turn around, sell it to Nested. Nested does the property management. And then you have organizations like Oasis who maybe help, you know, partner up or something. I mean, I just see like a big way to connect all the dots. And I feel like there's not enough people who are trying to see the bigger picture instead of their silo.
You know what's interesting, Eric, that there's another organization just north of us in Muskegon, Michigan, that it's called Gracious Grounds, and it's a faith-based organization that provides housing for young adults. I knew the person that founded that originally, and she said that they were approached by a builder who loved their concept and wanted to develop a whole community. Turns out he's in a wheelchair. See, when you find people that are in the finance area and the construction area that either have a disability themselves or live with it, now they're on the same radio station the rest of us are.
Yeah.
And sometimes the other ones can't see that. It's like, well, you know, those people don't have any money. Well, yeah, they actually guaranteed in money. You will get the rent every single month and they will stay there for years. Like Andrew Parker said, you know, that's a great deal to have if you're a real estate investor. So, you know, you're right. I would love to have a forum where we would invite people that have an interest, at least, in all this and get together and start brainstorming about what could be.
Yeah, and, making and note of that.
With disabilities there to say this is what we want because their voice is paramount.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, and Carrie, I think I've heard you say this in some of the chat cafes that, and I'm definitely paraphrasing, but you've talked about how it's important that the individual with the disability has a voice, not just the parents, right? Yeah. And I think all too often, mom and dad drown out the kid.
Almost always, until I get to a certain point when you realize that this is about them. And when I was 16, 17, 18, the last thing I wanted was my parents making choices for me. Why should I think it's any different from my child with autism and cerebral palsy? He doesn't want us making choices for him.
Yeah.
He wants us there when he needs us, and I understand that. And sometimes you have to back off, and tough love means watching them struggle to transfer from a chair to a bed, but they've got to learn to do it. I can't make it easy for them. I'm doing them a disservice when I do that, right?
Yeah, I heard it described somewhere. Maybe it was with you two or somebody else, but the dignity of failure, right?
Yeah.
Having the ability to fail and learn from our failures.
And I've heard it's the dignity of risk too. Knowing you're taking a chance that it might not work. You know, I went to college. I went to graduate school. I had that experience. I mean, you were in the Navy. Thanks for your service. My son, you know, retired from the Navy. But I learned more when I left college and failed at something than I ever did in a
room.
Yeah, with a professor.
Yeah.
We just talked about theory. Then you walked out and you fell down and skinned your leg. And okay, well, I can't do that again. I just have to find a different way to get it, a different outcome. So yeah. You learn in life by taking risks and failing. Now,
and then,
we all want to be there to pick someone up when they fall, but sometimes you have to know they're going to fall and let them do it.
Right. And sometimes you think you know they're going to fall, but they don't.
Yes.
Right? Because you don't really know. Yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
And to the point of failure, not the best segue, but you know, yeah. You started a podcast, right? So you took a risk. Well, in my opinion, you know, I think taking, you know, to me, starting a podcast was a risk.
Oh yes, it was. I'm going to do this. Ow. No. We're going to find out. Okay.
You heard the expression, fools rush in.
So how did that conversation go? Was it, Carrie, it sounds like it was Steve's idea all along and you kind of went along for the ride, or?
Well, it was his idea, but at the same time, I was working full time.
Oh, wow.
And taking care of Liam.
Wow.
And been doing that for many, many years. And so Steve retired. So it's like, okay, so now we're both getting Liam to appointments is now in your lap.
Right.
And so I'm going to see if I can develop some, I don't know, creative adult things that Carrie can do, because you have to have that as a special needs parent. Otherwise, yes. You just go cuckoo. And I was at the library checking out things. Well, guess what? They happen to have a seminar, a little brief couple day seminar on how to do a podcast.
Oh my
gosh. Steve, Megan, he's
so it really like, is all her fault.
This stuff, it just all lined up. It all came together. Steve and Alex were able to go to this. The young man who did the presentation was really excellent. I went just for a couple of different things that he was doing. Not necessarily, I was like, I just want to see stuff. Just talk to me about stuff and computers. I like computers. And so then when he said this was coming up, so they went to that one. And we're like so excited after that. Oh, we can do this. This is going to be great. And I'm like, all righty then. There you go. But at first, it was Steve interviewing. And it's like, that's great because you have he has the presence for it.
Okay.
And he downgrades his ability and his phenomenal ability to interview people. And I'm like, you do a really good job. I'm really nervous. I said, nobody knows that. See, nobody knows that. You might be, but nobody knows that. They don't know. You come off great. And some people that he's interviewed, he talks to me about being so very intimidated by them. I'm like, dude, you have a master's. Stop it. What the world? Well, you know, I'm like, so ask them how they do their stuff. You can do this. So I'm the cheerleader back here going, you can do this, you're fine. Just put your stuff down. What about this? What about that? Or we'll talk a little bit afterwards. I like this, I like that. What about this? What about that? You know.
I'm starting to feel more comfortable in my own skin. But at first it's like, okay, I don't really know what I'm doing or how I'm gonna put this together or whatever, but I'm gonna walk out there and say, yes, I have a podcast and talk to somebody who's a CEO of a large organization. It's like imposter syndrome.
You know? Oh, dude, I get it. I just interviewed somebody in Tel Aviv.
Really?
Yeah, a guy from the company Accessibe. They make accessible websites, or they make websites accessible. And yeah, that was my first international guest. So I totally get what you're talking about.
Now you put the bar higher, Eric. I've got to get an international guest now. Oh, I have one. Canada.
Yeah. So do you guys pregame before you do a podcast? Do you talk about the questions that you're going to ask? Or
oh, yeah.
Okay.
What I do, I'm largely the one doing the podcast itself, and she helps me put it together with the beginning and the end and discussing what we came back with, et cetera. So I do the hunting, and then we fix the do all the work behind the scenes.
Right.
But yeah, I will first of all recognize the need for people to know this. And then I will contact the individual or the person, organization, and say, I want to do a podcast on this. And, you know, I send them our link and everything so they could see we already got something going. It's nice to have a little history to be able to show people. And then I will have a discussion with them about how we're going to do this. I'm trying to make them part of the process. And I learned this from PodFest, is something we attended last year, my son Alex and I, that if you make your guest a part of the process by asking, you're co-creating this, they are less nervous.
Okay.
They feel a little more relaxed because they know what's going to come. And then I will send them ahead of time a discussion guide, not a script, just maybe a sequence of questions and some topics you want to cover. They can look at it, feel confident. So when we're talking, they're not going to get a question out of left field, you know. And so they get a little bit nervous. And I always tell them, this is not a live program. I would fall apart if it was live. I can cut this thing and paste it and make it sound really good. So if you burp in the middle of it, don't worry. That burp will disappear. A sneeze. The only one time, I got to tell you, Eric, this is funny. I was doing an interview at the Center for Independent Futures in Evanston, Illinois. And we were in this back room, okay, because it was quieter there. But they had some plumbing going through the room right above us. And every once in a while, a toilet would flush. I'm thinking, there's no way you can take the length of a toilet flush out of a conversation. And they're smiling and I'm smiling. And I thought, it's reality, okay?
Well, you had that other one where you were in a bus. I remember that. You were interviewing outside.
Yeah.
You had some in the back, but you were very open about it before the interview started. Well, maybe not, you know, you recorded that intro saying. Right.
You know, we're not trying to make it a polished professional. We're trying to make it real world. As a matter of fact, when I interviewed you.
He is trying that.
When I interviewed you, you walked outside and you had birds in the background. I thought it was wonderful.
Thank you. The other thing I really appreciate about your podcast is how real Carrie brings that parent perspective in the Chat Cafe portion, right? Where, Carrie, you've been very blunt about things you liked and things that you think other states could improve. No, I mean, I appreciate
Big
that.
Mouth. Big mouth. Go ahead. Okay.
She's always been a shy person.
I know, right? I know. Well, you know what? When it takes so long to get stuff done, you end up being blunt. You just have to do it. I don't want to beat around the bush. I just want to just get it right out there. Sorry.
No, but I think it adds that humanity, because sometimes when I'm listening to podcasts, it's like, okay, not podcasts I listen to all the time, but sometimes I'll try new ones to see if I can get into them. And they sound too polished. Polished isn't the right word. Just like everything's perfect. And,
manufactured.
You know, yes.
Manufactured. Yes. But not real. Part of what we started with the Chat Cafe was, now let's bring the real part of this in. Okay. We had this talk about these, the person who's started working with people with disabilities, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, now here's the real side of that. Thank you for that, because now this is where we are. And I keep trying to remind Steve and Alex that, you know, as a parent going through Liam's growing up years and, you know, for the last 30 years, I'm doing him and I'm trying to be my own person. I'm trying to be a wife and I'm trying to be a mom and I'm trying to be me. I don't have a lot of time left over after all that. I have no time. We have to keep this laser. How's this relate? How is this relevant? I try to put that into that aspect of it, because you might have this exhausted person hanging on by a fingernail, listening to this because they're at their end. And if I can say, that was hard, but look at where we've come. Look at how far we've come. There are options out there. Go here, look at this, do that, look at that. We've talked to people about programs I didn't even know existed. And I've been asking since Liam was 13 years old, what happens at transition? What happens at transition? I've been doing this since he was 13 years old. And nobody can tell you this mysterious thing where everything changes. It's like, that's not right. That's not right.
Yeah, when you transfer from child services to adult services.
All that stuff you knew, you no longer know.
Yeah.
All that stuff that did, no. It's like, that's not right. No. Maybe it's because I tease Steve and I say I'm one of 11 children. Yeah. And we all lived in a house together.
With one bathroom.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
Yeah. So
this makes it worse. I'm sorry, but this is the appropriate time to say it. She's one of 11. She's got 5 older and 5 younger. She's the middle child and one of 11.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know.
Wow.
That whole birth order thing, it's amazing.
Yeah. It's all wrong with me. Because I was the youngest of the first half and the oldest of the second half. But I'm the middle. See? I got it all. Anyway, because I'm used to so many different things, I'm a lot more flexible than a lot of other people out there. I can be more flexible, I should say.
Well, and I don't hear you saying your identity is Liam's mother. And sometimes I hear that with special needs parents where they've lost their identity and they're just a caretaker now.
Everybody knows Liam. And there have been times when I'm just like, that come up and people are talking to him. I'm like, excuse me, I'm sorry, who are you? This is my kid. You just come, who are you? Who are you?
I knew him from some other program.
Yes. Oh, well, I know him from that. But I'm like, okay, I don't know you.
You know, interesting point you bring up there about identity, because in a way, I do think of myself primarily as being Liam's father. That's a different hat that I wear, but it doesn't mean it's the only hat that I have. I have a very good friend I've known for the 15 years we lived in Michigan. And we were talking we talk every Friday, as a matter of fact. It's a regular standing coffee shop meeting. And several years ago, he said, you know, Liam really is a major determinant in your life, isn't he? I mean, a lot of things are built around Liam.
Sure.
And, you know, I can't say that that's a burden. Some things have been hard, but it's also been a blessing. As a matter of fact, I met a number of years ago who had built a 6 family unit because their adult daughter had Down syndrome. And they said, as soon as we move her in there with, you know, other girls that are similar and provide care, then we can go out and live our life like our friends are. We see them traveling and going out to dinner and doing all kinds of stuff. And we can live like them. Their daughter moved out and they said, no, we can't. That's not what we are. We're different. It's like retiring from a job. And I have that experience to deal with and not knowing who you are or what you're here for. Well, they just can't live the carefree life because their life was so much built upon their daughter with a disability. And it opens your eyes. It changes your values. It changes the way you look at the world. All for the good, I believe. Okay. Is it hard? Hell yes, it's hard. Okay. Right. There's a lot of times in which you're at the end of your rope and you've only got that one little thread you're hanging on to, right? But if you know that it's going to pass and you will get a reset, and we always do, you learn from it. Again, like learning from your mistakes, you have to learn from the hard times because that's where you get appreciation for the good times too. And then you realize that it's all good.
I agree. And the thing I would add to that, Steve, is no matter how alone you feel, you're not.
No.
Right? I mean, it's when you're in your dark moments that you feel the most alone, and that's when you should be reaching out.
Yeah.
You know, even though you feel like somebody's going to shut, and again, this is personal experience.
Yeah.
You know, particularly after my wife died, I had to force myself to reach out and talk to people, not even necessarily ask for help because I'm too proud for that. And I'm too good for that. But it was definitely, you know, at least reaching out and talking to people because I just wanted to retreat into myself. And I know you guys have your own
shirt. Very male of you. Very male of you, Eric.
Yeah.
You've come a long way.
Still coming. But I think it's important for families and anybody else listening, even if they're not a parent, to hear this, because I think, you know, I think it's so natural to want to isolate yourself to protect yourself when you're going through something hard, you know, and you really need to find, in a perfect world, you would build that community beforehand, be it special needs parents or not, but you need to build that community.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's critical. And our kids need that too. Not only do the parents need it, but the kids need it.
Right.
If we're not here because we've died or we're just too old, you know, who are they going to rely upon? And it can't always be family. Some people don't have family. It's one of the hardest things I've had to hear when I was in financial services, saying, well, who can serve as a trustee or a guardian when you're no longer here? And they would say, I don't know, we have no family. I'm thinking, I'm looking down somebody in an abyss, because they are really disconnected and they have no supports, no natural supports to speak of. Yeah. They have to get busy building a family.
I mean, luckily you have court, and this isn't the answer for everybody, but there are corporate trustees, and in states like Washington State will actually have guardians that people will sign up to be guardians. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm a single dad. I don't have any family that I would, let's just say I'm not putting my family into my estate plan, and we'll just leave it at that, you know?
Yeah.
So where do you want to go with Inlaki? Where do you see navigating life as we know it going?
My son is really good at this. We think, and we're speaking totally objectively, that he is a genius, you know? We think that maybe some aliens dropped him in the basket, and I don't know where he gets it from, but he is really, really genius. And we'll sit down and he'll say, Dad, on the next season, let's do some investigative reporting.
Ooh.
Let's do more deep dives into some things. Let's look at the problems and the way things are and the way they should be and what it takes to make them better.
Ooh,
so, like, you know, we have a couple of programs coming up. One of them I'm interviewing. I found someone who's been around for 30 years and knows all the ins and outs about Medicaid waivers in Michigan and other services too, because we have to go through something called the Supports Intensity Scale, which is an assessment, and also a psychosocial assessment before we go through the person-centered plan. You're shaking your head. You probably have the same thing.
Similar, okay. Yeah.
I had no idea that they were intrinsically connected to the person-centered planning process. And I don't know what the results of those assessments, how that might affect the types of services that are offered. And I was never told that from community mental health. So I found somebody who can tell me, because she's been on the inside and the outside, and she is a parent with a child with autism, or an adult child. So I'm going to be interviewing her and then going through all the different waivers, because there's a lot of overlap. You know, three waivers will cover one thing, but one will have something defined a little differently. One will say that they'll provide in-home care, and the other one says in-home supports.
Yes.
Okay. Why does one say supports and one say something different? Mm-hmm. I want to know why, and I want parents to know why.
What does that mean?
My goal is for parents to be able to go into that planning process and know how these pieces fit together and what they're entitled to.
I love that.
That's a big, huge hole.
Yeah. And right. It's what you don't know can hurt you very, very badly.
Exactly. And I don't know what to ask for if I don't even know what's on the bookshelf.
Right, right.
So I know what I think Liam needs. And I've even said, can you give me any input on some of this stuff? Because I've never had a kid with cerebral palsy and autism before. Okay. I've never had one who was 13 before. I've never had one who was 17 before. It's like, can you help me? And they're like, no.
Yeah. That was one of the things that drove me up a wall when I was getting my son set up with self-direction. They're like, well, tell us what you want your son to have. I'm like, that's like asking me to pick off a menu in a restaurant I've never seen before. I mean,
I want him to have everything.
Yeah.
I want him to have all of it. Everything.
It's just so crazy to me that, and I believe they mean well, but I just don't know where these agencies are coming from, where they're like, oh, parents know best. Well, yes, to a degree, but parents have to know what's out there. You know, like a big thing I tell my parents when I'm working with them is, when you get that first interview to determine if you're eligible for the waiver, you have to imagine your child on the worst day, and you know, neither of you are around to take care of them. You know, and it's spelled out that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you mentioned parents know best, and they say that, and we know our kid better than anybody else, but we also have more biases than anybody else because we live with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we've gone through person-centered planning before, where they almost just have a checkbox of, you know, does he do this? Okay, we'll set these goals, et cetera. That seems very clinical. I did an episode on charting the life course. It's a life planning tool that could be used for person-centered planning. And it was developed, I think, in Oklahoma or Kansas, someplace west of here, by one of the universities. It is one of the best things I've ever seen. If you can go Charting the Life course on Google, you'll find out all the materials, and it's wonderful. Yeah. That could be good for any high school senior to decide what they want to do with their life. It analyzes not only their desires, but the opinions the trusted advisors around them have in terms of what their strengths are. I know that I have strengths that I only became aware of because somebody else told me. Because you have bias against yourself too, you know, that whole imposter syndrome. So the Charting the Life course is excellent, but I've never seen anything that came close to that. So we started using an independent facilitator for this, for the person-centered planning. And we're using that. 2 weeks we do his update for this year, and we're using Charting the Life course tools.
Who's the facilitator?
Her name is Jan Lampman. That's the person I'm interviewing for all the waivers for Michigan.
Okay. I recently interviewed Kenzie Clark. She started Able Transition Consulting out of North Carolina. And she takes, I think, a similar approach. I don't know if she uses Charting a Life course, but she uses a person-centered plan as a starting point and then builds out life plans that, you know, gets the person involved. And it's just much more in depth than what I went through. To your point, Steve, about checking the box, when I went through my son's PCP process, it was like, it just felt ridiculous. I mean, it was, why am I doing this?
You're doing it for their benefit because the people running the program have to have that paperwork completed.
Yes. No, this has been a fantastic conversation. As we wind down, is there anything you want to make sure the listeners hear that you share with them, or anything you want to make, any final points that you want to make?
I just say that life is hard, but it teaches us a lot. Right. And by all means, share your feelings with other people that are in the same boat. And you got to pick wisely, because sometimes people will take you down. Be with people that can lift you up.
You also need to understand that it is our jobs as parents of young adults with special needs to explain how this works to people who don't have that. When the company that I just retired from, I had a couple of the girls there, they did not have children with special needs. And it was only because of my honesty and the things that I would be going through with getting Liam stuff and things. They're like, I had no idea. I had no idea that was even, I had no idea. It's like, yeah. Welcome to my world.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
I'd say one of the last things is for people that might feel more isolated. They're throughout the whole country, in every state, we have Centers of Independent Living, CIFs. Here we have, it's called Disability Advocates of Kent County. It's a CIF. In Ottawa County, we have Disability Advocates Lakeshore. It's still a CIL, I'm sorry, a CIL, Communities of Independent Living, or Centers for Independent Living. And you'll have them everywhere. Give them a call. Say, I'm just trying to find other parents in the same boat as I am. You might find out there is an organization that meets twice a month at the library. Mm-hmm. And get out of your comfort zone. Go and meet them.
Right.
Don't necessarily start by oversharing, but go back again. And it might not be easy. And go back again and get to know people. Sit down and have discussions with them. We need to do that. And it might be hard if you're an introvert, but you need to do it. It's like getting fresh air. Right. You have to. Yes. And you might think, well, you know, they have their problems. I don't want to have more problems to deal with. No, they also have solutions.
That's right.
And relationships are important. We're hardwired for relationships. Mm-hmm. So do that. Your outlook will improve. Life is still going to be hard, but you can turn the lights on a little bit. Know where you're going.
I love that. I love that. So the last question I've been asking all of my guests is, do you have one tool, book, podcast, whatever, that you just really love and you want to share because it's just been a game changer for you?
Whoa. Not my cordless drill, huh? You know, the keeper of all the tools is my son, Alex. He has the systems we use behind the scenery to keep track of everything. We have a system where it progresses. We check off boxes. We make sure we got all this done, and automatically goes the next one. It sends out emails to people that are responsible for putting it together. It's probably the kind of things you outsource, but we have it here. Those are amazing tools, and they help me in other areas of my life to keep track of things by breaking a task down to like 4 or 5 steps. This one I have to do on Monday. I can do the step 2 on Wednesday and steps 3 and 4 maybe over the weekend. But I can't do that in the weekend unless I get these 2 steps. So it helps me think more strategically by going through the process of creating a web podcast.
Is there software to use for that? Because I'm thinking, you know, families who have a lot going on, you know, they can almost use the same thing to break down their, well, we've got a kid's doctor appointment for this. Before we go to the doctor, we have to do X, Y, or Z, or we're going to set up an estate plan, but we need to get these things in place. You know, almost like.
No, quite possibly. The program we're using right now is called Trello, T-R-E-L-L-O. And it's not designed for podcasts. It's designed for organizing projects. My son just adapted it to podcasts, and he brought it to a level that maybe the designers never had in mind. So you could say, yes, we're going to do this large project and requires the production of several different things on the way, and there's steps. Mm-hmm. This has to be done before the next step. And this, you have little cards on this chart, and you check off all the boxes, and it pops over and sends an email to the next person.
Right.
Now you have to do these steps. When they do that, it pops over and it informs maybe 3 people that they have to do this. So there's a process like a conveyor belt that gets the job done.
Right.
It's probably overkill for some things, but for some larger things, when there's more than one person involved, when there's several people involved, that could be really good.
I mean, I'm thinking about it like, Carrie, you said you do everything for Liam. Well, think about it. Eventually, it might take a team to replace you. What if you started, if you had something like Trello where you started putting everything you do into Trello and breaking it down, what are all the parts that you need to do and who would, you know, who might be responsible? And maybe I'm overthinking this. I mean, I'm definitely guilty of that sometimes.
Maybe engineer. I get it. Yeah. I have one of those in the family. No, that's very creative, and it's something I hadn't thought about, but we are all concerned about what happens when I'm gone, which is another episode we're going to be doing in the future. Who cares for and who cares about our children? It's 2 different things.
There
needs to be some guidance and instructions with the understanding that whoever is functioning in that role or whatever that team is will at some point have to make the decision to throw that out and do something different.
Correct.
Because what we decided to do 20 years earlier is not the direction that person's life is taking. And they have to let that person speak more for themselves and maybe rely more upon their instincts of what's necessary now.
And I think that's the perfect place to leave it. Thank you, Steve and Carrie, for your time and your insights. This has been awesome. I love this conversation. I love talking to you, Steve.
I am honored. This is the first time I've ever done a podcast from this end.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it. And Carrie, thank you as well.
Yeah,
I really
you make it very easy.
Yes.
Very easy.
Thank you for listening to the ABCs of Disability Planning podcast. We invite your feedback and comments. Please feel free to leave a review wherever you are listening. And don't forget to hit like, follow, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. If you would like to connect, please email me, eric@specialneedsnavigator.us. If you'd like to learn more about or talk with a guest, please reference the show notes to find the best way to reach them.